Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashberry. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1283 presents classic stories by Life Rattle writer Bayan Khatib. Bayan Khatib was born in Aleppo, Syria, in 1979. Her parents left her with her maternal grandparents when she was 11 months old until she was 7 years old. This separation of mother and daughter forms the emotional core of the stories Khatib has written for Life Rattle. The family came to Toronto when Bayan was 8, after spending half a year in Calgary and before that half a year in Denver, Colorado. Bayan Khatib married at 17, moved to Mississauga, and began her studies at the University of Toronto at Mississauga the next year. Today she lives in Toronto with her husband and children. Khatib studied English literature and professional writing and communication at the University of Toronto. Let's listen now as Bayan Khatib reads her first story tonight here on Life Rattle. And remember, some Life Rattle stories contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive.
My Two Worlds, Bayan Khatib. Once upon a time, I lived like a princess. I lived in a palace surrounded by exotic gardens where fragrant flowers blossomed, roses, sunflowers, jasmines, and other flowers unknown to the outside world, and where colorful birds sang and I danced to their music, and where sweet fruits grew, apricots, grapes, and peaches, and they were all mine. "You can never eat too much fruit," my Nana would say. I lived there with my Nana and my grandpa. My Nana told me stories while she sewed dresses for my 3 dolls. My grandpa carried me on his back and played with me. Sometimes I helped him take care of the plants in the garden. I helped him dig the soil, plant the seeds, and water the tomato, cucumber, and eggplant sprouts. After the sprouts blossomed, I helped him pick the vegetables for Nana. We picked baskets and baskets of tomatoes. Every summer, Nana invited her 3 sisters over to our house to make enough tomato sauce to last all of them the whole year. Syrians use tomato sauce in many dishes, such as bame, fasulye, and mehshi. Mehshi, my favorite, is made with eggplants and zucchinis, stuffed with a meat and rice mixture, and cooked in tomato sauce, lemon juice, garlic, and spices. My grandpa sang to me as we worked together in the garden, songs about how much he loved me and how precious and valuable I was to him, songs that I can barely remember, and songs that I can never forget. My grandpa retired early from his political career. "The corrupt government of Syria wanted to force their evil ways on everybody," Nana told me. "But your grandpa was an honest man. He chose to retire early over cheating his own people." Nana felt proud of Grandpa. "Your grandpa was the first in his family to finish school. His parents tried to keep him away from school and on the farm with his 3 brothers and 4 sisters. That's what kids were good for back then. He refused and became the first in his family to finish school and go to university. Grandpa studied law at the University of Aleppo. Nana quit school after grade 5. Some people look down at her for her lack of education, but my Nana can exceed any scientist in her intelligence and love, care, and kindness. No one can make me feel special the way Nana can." One day, my fairy tale ended. My palace turned into a small, cramped apartment in a strange land. My gardens became a small yard with dandelions in place of my beautiful flowers. I saw brown birds in place of the red, blue, and yellow birds that used to sing in my garden. I couldn't dance to the sad songs the brown birds sang. Everything wasn't all mine anymore. My Nana, my grandpa, and happiness vanished. I was 7 years old when I got onto a plane for the first time. I wish I had never gotten onto that plane. My nana told me I had to leave Syria. I had to go to America to live with my real family. Remember when I showed you this picture before? My nana said, pointing to a picture of a woman, a man, and three little children standing in front of an old brown building. Yes, I answered. You said this is your daughter in America, and that's her husband and her children. That's right. This woman is also your real mother. And this is your father and your brother and your sisters. I couldn't comprehend Nana's words. This must be another one of her stories, I thought. 3 months after Nana handed me over to my mother, Nana and Grandpa went back to Syria and left me behind. Please don't leave me. I hate them. I want to go home. Please take me with you. I pleaded with my grandmother as I stuffed my clothing into her suitcase. My efforts were useless. I cried. Nana cried. Mama cried. We all cried as Nana kissed me goodbye and boarded her plane. My mother's arms around me couldn't comfort me. Nothing could, for Nana was gone, and she was the only comfort I had ever known. I never resented my grandparents for leaving me. In Nana's eyes, Mama could only be perfect, as all of Nana's children were. Nana needed to believe that because her children are all she has. They are her life's work. They are her masterpieces. I raised my children to be all that I couldn't be, Nana told me. I adjusted to my new life. I had no choice but to give in. I started to call my new parents Mama and Baba. I accepted that my old Mama and Baba are now Nana and Grandpa. I accepted, but I did not understand. I learned to live with sisters and brothers. I learned how to share candy, toys, attention, and love. I learned that I was not the center of the universe. I missed being the only princess in a big palace. I hated being the eldest child in a big family. In my dreams, I could feel Nana's warmth. I could smell the white jasmines in my garden. I could hear my grandpa sing to me. I could walk through the big gray metal gates that lead into the garden, and I could pick a small vine of sour green grapes on my way to the glass doors that led into my grandparents' house. I could sleep in my bed next to Nana and warm my cold feet against her back. I could play with my dolls on the balcony and wave to the people who passed by. I loved to dream. I never once questioned what happened. I didn't ask, and they didn't explain. Years of thinking and trying to understand alone only led to confusion and resentment. My mother never learned how to love me, kiss me, hold me, or comfort me. I cried alone and no longer expected anyone to hear my crying or to wipe my tears away. My grandparents taught me to need too much love, I guessed. Only I knew of the tears that flowed every night. To the world, I smiled. I smiled a weak, faint smile. It wouldn't be fair to make my parents sound like heartless monsters. They just couldn't care enough. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe I needed too much. They had 5 other children. I guess there's only so much love in one heart. My mother's heart had to be divided into too many tiny pieces. I stood last in line. I know mothers aren't perfect. I know partly from being a mother myself. I learned there is no way a mother could not love her child, at least a little bit. Sometimes life can make it hard to show love.
That was My Two Worlds, written and read by Bayan Khatib. Khatib's next story is called The Elevator. Let's hear that one now.
The Elevator, Bayan Khatib. The sun set several hours ago, but still I could not sleep. Even with the darkness of the night, the gentle rocking of the van as my uncle drove, and my nana's warm lap, I could not sleep. Only a few more minutes, my uncle called out. Only a few more minutes until I would meet my parents for the first time since I was a baby. I had lived in Syria for 7 years with my grandparents. Problems I didn't understand had separated me from my parents for 7 years. For 7 years, my grandparents protected me from the truth. It had taken 7 years for my grandfather to find a way to get me out of the country and back to my parents. A few weeks ago, Nana, the only mother I had known for 7 years, explained to me that she was not my mother. She was my grandmother. "This is your mother, your father, your brother, and your sister," she said, as she showed me pictures of my real family. "Your mother is very nice, and she's going to take very good care of you." I felt like Nana was telling me a story about this imaginary family in America. America was too far away to worry about, I thought. Two cars full of relatives said goodbye to us at Damascus Airport. They all cried as they kissed and hugged me. I waved goodbye to my relatives, my country, and my childhood. I didn't know my goodbye was forever. My grandfather, my grandmother, and I flew to Mississippi, where my eldest uncle lived. My uncle had a daughter my age. She didn't like me. I didn't speak English, and she didn't speak Arabic. Her white, blonde, blue-eyed friends didn't like me either. I ignored their arrogance. I forced myself into their games and complained to my grandmother if they didn't play with me. "June, I want you to be nice and let Layla play with you and your friends," I overheard Nana say to my cousin. "You know she's only here for a few days." Nana slipped some money into my cousin's hand. I couldn't tell how much. As soon as my uncle got a break from his work at the hospital, we prepared for the long drive from Mississippi to Denver, Colorado, where my parents lived. After hours and hours of driving, my uncle called out, "We're here." He parked the van in front of an old brown building. The building had three floors and spiraling stairs at its sides. Each floor of the building shared one balcony that stretched from one end of the floor to the other. I saw a man and a woman running down the stairs from an apartment on the second floor. "That's them," my uncle said. I felt someone lift me off the ground, and I felt a tight embrace, and I felt kisses all over my face, and I saw tears streaming down the face of the woman who held me so tightly, and then the man beside her took me from her and hugged me and kissed me and carried me up the stairs into a small apartment. The living room looked plain and empty. Besides an old green couch, I saw only a small television sitting on a table just large enough to hold it. My grandparents and uncle sat on the couch. My parents sat on the floor. I sat on Nana's lap. "The kids fell asleep," my mother said apologetically. "They tried hard to stay awake, but it got too late. They were really excited to meet their new sister, though." "I'll go wake them up," my father said. "They can wait till tomorrow," my mother said, but my father was already in the bedroom. Seconds later, three wide-awake children walked out of the bedroom and sat next to my mother on the floor. Their ages were 5, 4, and 3. I felt old for the first time in my life. My father introduced us to each other. None of us said anything. We stared at each other as the adult spoke. That night, I slept on the floor next to my grandmother. Nana cuddled me as she did every night. I didn't realize that soon I would have to learn how to sleep without my Nana's arms around me. At the beginning, my parents treated me special and spoiled me. At the beginning, my brother wanted to give me all his toys. At the beginning, I thought it might be fun to be a big sister. After a few weeks, everything changed. Every morning, as soon as we woke up, we went outside to play in the playground we shared with the kids from the surrounding buildings. One morning, my brother told me that he wanted to show me something in the building across from ours. I loved an adventure. My brother and I ran to the building. We walked through the dim and empty entrance. Do you know what this is? My brother asked. No. It's an elevator. What's an elevator? Come, I'll show you. My brother pressed the up button, and we walked into the elevator together. He pressed 20, the highest floor in the building. I watched the elevator door close. Just before the door closed completely, my brother ran out of the elevator. I stood alone. The elevator went up. I pushed and hit the door. It wouldn't open. I watched the numbers lighting up on the side panel. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, until it got to 20. The door opened. I ran out of the elevator. I looked around. I saw nothing. I heard nothing. I felt scared. I sat on the floor in front of the elevator and cried and cried and cried. I thought about Nana and cried. I thought about my home in Syria, so far away, and cried. I thought about my new family and cried. A woman with two children walked to the elevator and pressed the down button. She looked at me. I looked at her. She asked me questions. I didn't understand. I don't speak English, I said in Arabic. You speak Arabic? She asked me in Arabic. Yes. Why are you crying? I don't know how to go back home. Where do you live? I don't know. What's your mother's name? I didn't know what to answer. I wanted to tell her Nana's name, but I knew she wouldn't know Nana, and she might know Mama. Do you know a woman named Dawn? Yes, she's my friend. She lives in the building across from here. Oh my God, are you Dawn's daughter, the one who just came from Syria? Yes. Come with me, I'll take you to her. Nana had taught me never to go anywhere with a stranger. But this stranger was my only hope of ever getting back to Nana. I followed the lady, and she took me back to my parents' apartment. My mother hugged me as she thanked her friend again and again. I told my mother what my brother had done to me. My brother ran to his room. My mother ran after him and shut the door. I heard her yell. I heard him scream. I felt nothing for him. The next morning, my father took me over to the building across from ours and taught me how to use an elevator.
That was Bayan Khatib reading her story, The Elevator. Khatib's final story on tonight's program is called Subway.
Subway. Bayan Khatib. Mama walked out of the tiny room she used for her office. She walked over to the corner of the living room that my father used as his office. Busy? She asked. Sort of. She leaned over to see what he was doing on the computer. Sort of? You're playing cards. My father laughed. My mother shook her head. Well, I need you to take this medicine to Kate right away, Mama said, putting a small bag of medicine on my father's desk. She called me a while ago. She's feeling very sick. She needs this medicine right away. I never met Kate before, but Mama told me about her. She was an old lady with MS, and she had no family to care for her. She lived alone in a building downtown. The government took care of her. People don't care about the elderly in this society. Their children leave them in old age homes and let strangers care for the people that cared for them when they were little, I remember Mama saying after she told me about Kate. No problem, my father said. I'll get that medicine to her this evening. Mama walked back to her office where she spent most of her time. Layla, my father called. I put my grade 5 math book down and walked over to my father. Yes? Take this medicine to Kate. What? You heard me. I said take this medicine to Kate, your mother's patient. How am I supposed to do that? Take the subway. But I don't know how. Didn't I tell you never to say I don't know? It's that attitude that makes people stupid. If you don't know, you learn. How am I supposed to learn? By trying yourself. Wouldn't it be easier if someone just taught me? You will learn my way. But I have a math test tomorrow. I knew that argument was useless. Homework never mattered to my father. You do it later. My father pulled out a subway map from under a pile of papers. He spread it over his desk. Where are we? He asked. I don't know. Here, I guessed, pointing to the Lawrence East subway station. No, we're at Lawrence West, not East. And you want to go to Union Station down here? He pointed to Union Station. So which direction will you go on the subway? Down? South. You take the bus across the street from our house. In 1 minute, you'll be at the Lawrence West Station. You get off the bus, go downstairs, take the subway that is going south, and get off at Union. Okay. Mama walked into the living room. Are you leaving soon? She asked my father. No, I'm busy. Layla's going to take the medicine to Kate. How? On the subway. What? She's never taken the subway alone before. She doesn't know. You too. Don't say she doesn't know. She will learn. Fine, it's your responsibility. Mama walked back to her office. I went upstairs to get dressed. My brother sat on my bed, reading. Where are you going? He asked. I have to take medicine to Mama's patient, 'cause somebody's too busy playing solitaire. I'm gonna do so bad on that test tomorrow. I wasted all of yesterday 'cause I was counting on today to study. Can't count on anything around here. I went back downstairs, put my shoes on, and reached for the door. Do you have the 4 things that I told you to always have with you before you leave the house? I opened my purse and looked inside. I have a Kleenex and a pen and my keys, but I don't have a quarter. A quarter is very important. If you get lost or anything happens, you need a quarter so you can call home. My father took a quarter out of his pocket and gave it to me. I put it in my purse and left. I crossed the street and stood at the bus stop. I saw my father watching me from the kitchen window. The bus came and blocked his view of me. I got on the bus and put my child ticket into the ticket slot. I sat on the first seat in the bus. An old woman with a puppy sat across from me. I stared at her as she spoke softly to her puppy. She looked up. Our eyes met. She frowned at me. I turned away and looked out the window. Lawrence West, the driver called out. I got off the bus and took the escalator down to the subway. I stood on the side that said southbound. I wondered what bound meant. I stood close to the edge of the platform and waited for the subway to come. I heard the loud sound of the subway coming. I felt cool air blow against my body. The subway door stopped right in front of me, and I walked in. I looked around. Where should I sit? Should I sit next to the old couple, or next to the weird guy with the neon green hair and tattoos? I decided to sit next to a small group of teenagers. Big mistake. They spoke loudly and laughed about some poor girl at their school. Did you see what she wore today? I know. Can you believe someone could have such bad taste? And I don't understand how Andrew could like her. They went on and on about the girl, until they all got off at St. George. The subway was quiet for the rest of the way. I looked over at the guy with the green hair, rocking back and forth and listening to his Walkman. I could hear the beat of the music through his earphones. At Union, almost everyone got off the subway. Union was the last stop. I walked out of the station and walked towards Kate's building. I took the elevator up to her apartment and knocked on the door. An old woman in a wheelchair opened the door. Hi, I said. Hello, dear. Come in. My mother sent me to give you this. I handed her the bag of medicine. Her apartment smelled like a hospital. Thank you, dear. I'm feeling really sick. I can't even get out of my wheelchair. Everything aches. I felt awkward. I didn't know what to say. Would you like something to drink or a snack? No, thank you. Or at least have a cookie, she said. She handed me a plate of oatmeal and raisin cookies. I hated oatmeal and raisin cookies. I took one anyway and put the plate back on the table. Thanks. Oh, thank you, dear. I really need this medicine. I felt like the old lady didn't want me to go, but I didn't know what to say. The silence reached an uncomfortable level. Well, I hope you feel better soon. Thank you. Well, I have to go now. I walked over to the door. Bye. Bye, dear. I felt sorry for the old woman. She had nobody, and every day of her life was full of pain. I was glad Mama cared enough to send her the medicine. The ride back home felt faster. I took the northbound train and got off at Lawrence West. I took bus 52A that stopped right in front of our house. How was your trip? My father asked. Fine. Did you give the medicine to Kate? Mama asked. Yes. How did she look? Awful. I went up to my room and called Jasmine, my best friend. I told Jasmine about my first experience on the subway alone. You're so lucky your dad actually lets you take the subway alone. He's not so overprotective like my parents, Jasmine said. I'd rather overprotective, I said. At least you know they care.
That was Bayan Khatib reading her story, Subway. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1283. Arnie Ackman recorded Bayan Khatib reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Life Rattle returns next week with more stories, and Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.